two friends taking pictures of the rising full moon on a summer night.
Two teenage kids doing what teenage kids do.
When a stranger with a gun and a death wish changed everything.
It was violent, it was senseless, and I will never understand it, I will never accept it.
I'm Amy Donaldson, and unfortunately, we're all too familiar with stories about how violence shatters lives. But what we rarely see is how they are rebuilt. In a new podcast, The Letter, we relive tragedy, but only so we can hear the rest of the story. The struggle to reclaim lives, the realities of grief, and the possibilities of forgiveness.
I believe in miracles. Sometimes I thought, there are no miracles. Yeah, there are, and this is a big one.
Follow The Letter at theletterpodcast.com or wherever you get your podcasts.
Utah's best athletes count on flexibility, speed, strength.
And the Jazz pick up their 22nd assist.
So they count on University of Utah Health.
Brielle Soleil puts this game away.
And so can you. Leading doctors, a world-class environment, award-winning innovation, care to be great.
14 unanswered by the Utes.
University of Utah Health, caring for Utah's best and yours. Schedule your appointment now at uofuhealth.org/care to be great.
Hans and Scotty, 97.5, the KSL Sports Zone. We're going to talk a little Florida football, previewing some of the upcoming opponents for the Utes and the Cougars.
Really quick before we do that, Sham Sharania just sent out a tweet that says, the NBA will retire the number 6 league-wide, honoring the late and legendary player activist Bill Russell. The first thought is, whoa. There are a lot of people that would be deserving. But then it's like, not really. There's not a lot of guys that did what Bill Russell
pretty impressive resume
did in his time in the NBA. But retiring number 6 league-wide, what an incredible honor for Bill Russell.
Let's talk a little football as we are, about 3 weeks away from getting this thing started. Florida will open up against the University of Utah in the Swamp. Joining us now from The Athletic, Florida beat writer Alan Taylor, kind enough to join us. Alan, how are you?
Hey, Alan.
Doing well, guys. How about yourself?
We're good.
Doing all right. All right, just from a weather standpoint, if a Utah fan's going to Gainesville in early September, just how miserable is that going to be?
Well, it would have been a lot more miserable had it been a noon or a 3:30 kick. So it will only be miserable for the tailgating. You know, by kickoff at 7, it'll be a little bit more bearable. You're still gonna perspire a little bit. Don't get me wrong. But I've only been in Gainesville about 2.5 years, and I'm shocked at actually how pleasant it is here relative to, say, Orlando or even the South Florida area. And, I'm not saying that it doesn't get rough, but it's not the hellish heat that I've seen even in, Alabama or Georgia.
So, looks, I'm back to 2019 right now on the schedule. 2020 beat South Carolina in the opener. 2019, the home opener, beat Miami in the home opener. 2018, Charleston. So, when's the last time they lost a home opener?
Dude, I hadn't even looked that up because Florida has not usually had a good home and home out of the gate. They played a couple of neutral site games. I guess Michigan and even Miami technically was a neutral site game in the mid part of the state. But this is sort of, at least having a home game against a top 10 opponent in the Swamp. And certainly, I guess the Pac-12 team. I mean, those games just haven't existed in the past. And a few years ago, Scott Strickland added, not only Utah, but Cal and Arizona State to the schedule. So it looks like Gators trying to broaden their scheduling horizon.
Utah's a good team, but not necessarily, I'm sure, in SEC country, a household name. Where are Florida fans, what are their thoughts on this Is there just kind of a thought of, well, look, we're still Florida, they're Utah, this should be a Florida win? Or is there a certain level of respect for the Utes coming into this one?
I think there's a respect because of how long, you know, Whittingham has been there and what they've done, over the last decade. So, and certainly, you know, Urban Meyer being here for a while, makes Utah a little more top of mind. But I also feel like this isn't, there's not a lot of dread attached to this game like there might be if, say, you know, the home opener was against Georgia or Ohio State. I think the fan base expects, Napier, even with a quite honestly, a mediocre roster, I think there's a lot of people here that think, you know, Florida can win that game against Utah, especially since it is, as you mentioned, at home. And you know, Utah doesn't play a lot of games in the Southeast.
I was just looking at the schedule from last year, and you get that 6-6 mark. Florida hits that 6-6 mark and beats Florida State, their in-state rival, there at the back end of the season. And then they lose to Central Florida in the Gasparilla Bowl, puts them 6-7 on the season. How unacceptable is that in terms of what Florida is doing and what they project to do? How much do the fans kind of revolt against that? And how unbearable was that season last year?
Well, it got unbearable quickly because even after the LSU loss, that thing dropped from the 4-3. There was a feeling that the coordinators were probably going to be changed out, at least on the defensive side, but that Mullen was okay. And quite honestly, even after the no-show at South Carolina, when they lost 40-17, on the surface, I still didn't think that even that kind of year would be the end of Dan Mullen. But what happened was that sort of stripped away the facade that things were, that it was just an anomaly, that it was just one bad year. And when you start digging into the recruiting and where the roster looks for future years, and quite honestly, what was Mullen's plan to fix it? Well, that didn't jive or inspire confidence for Scott Strickland or the fan base. And so, you know, a coach last year who had been extended during the summer, you know, is fired 6 months later, and now we've got Napier doing a rebuild down here with a sort of a totally different approach. So, you know, to your question, 6-7 by itself wouldn't be grotesque because, you know, what they've seen under Muschamp and McElwain, they had some rough years there as well. But the fact that there wasn't a lot of hope about the future coming out of that meant there was time for change.
So that leads us to Billy Napier, who just did some remarkable work. I think only, what, 5 losses in the last 3 seasons at Louisiana. But again, that's Sun Belt. That's a little bit different than SEC play. What's the culture change been like, and how has it been received? Obviously a younger, more energetic presence, but does it feel like it's translating over to team success?
I think it will, whether that's short-term success or long-term is yet to be determined. But, you know, what he has done is he has structured their days down to the minute. There's no more of, guys showing up a few minutes late or not knowing what they were doing. Meals are scheduled, workouts are scheduled. Time is scheduled in the offseason to a degree that it never was before. And as you would expect out of a roster of, 85 scholarship guys and 15 and 20 more walk-ons, that didn't work with everybody. So he got to let go in the summer. But overall, I think the discipline has been received well by the players who are here. The structure has been received well. And, the offseason has gone about as well as it could. I know there's a couple of 5-star recruits that Florida didn't get that would have pacified the fan base because Napier is really hanging his hat on building a huge recruiting staff. But otherwise, the fans and the team are really embracing this because they think they might have a coach here who 3 or 4 years down the road can get them back to winning SEC championships and competing for national titles.
So Emory Jones, the starting quarterback from last year, kind of sat and waited his time through a few years and finally gets the start, runs off for nearly 3,000 yards and 19 touchdowns, and he decides to jump in the portal, and I believe that he's going to be playing for Arizona State now. I think we're going to probably see him a little bit later in the season on a University of Utah schedule. But what happens now with the quarterback position at Florida? Who do we see take the reins and run with this?
Yeah, well, you have certainly see, you know, Emory, who statistically had some big games last year, but the interceptions that tied for the most in the SEC were just drive killers and game changers. And it was pretty apparent after the season was over that he was going to leave. In fact, it was sort of shocking that the coaching staff talked him into staying around at least for the start of spring practice. But then, you know, Emory, you know, realized that it was probably going to be Anthony Richardson's job. And so he's in the portal and now he's off of Tennessee. But, you know, the number one guy here who is getting a ton of hype, and a lot of it's premature, obviously, is Anthony Richardson, because when you see this guy run and jump and casually flip balls 50, 60 yards, it's really impressive. But his production on the field through, you know, spot action last year, and barely something going all the true freshmen, the stats don't scream that. So there's going to be a day where he's going to be a man, and he's going to be a terrific quarterback. Is that this year, or does he still need another year of development because he's never had to leave this program before? But the physical stuff is pretty awe-inspiring. I mean, this guy could be an NFL tight end. This guy could probably be an NFL receiver, but also he wants to be an NFL quarterback, which is why you see the mock drafts project him to have a monster season and maybe be a first-round pick next year. I don't trust that because I haven't seen it for an elongated period of time, but he's going to do some special things week in and week out.
It's a interesting twist of fate that Mohamed Diabate is going to be playing in the Swamp wearing a Utah uniform in that game. Just what kind of a player are the Utes getting in that transfer?
Yeah, he's a little undersized last year. Florida moved him from sort of an edge rusher to the Mike position because of an injury to their Mike linebacker. And I think you're getting a smart, athletic, accountable guy. I'm just not sure he was a fit at the Mike. And from what I've discerned from talking to some people he used to coach, and it looks like Utah's going to move him around a little bit and let him be more of a pursuit guy. You know, he top 100 recruit coming out of high school. He never became all SEC type of player here, but really his biggest action was really over the last year and a half. So Utah's getting a guy who, in the right scheme, in the right position, can really impact a defense. So I know a lot of people here are rooting for him. He's very popular in the locker room. And outside of week one, I think people here are wishing him a lot of success.
So where would you place the greatest strength on this Florida team right now?
It's probably, well, let's put it this way. There's not a singular unit that just wows you. But there are pockets, you know, that the entire secondary is back except for one cornerback, Kai Elam, who was a first-round draft pick, but it's pretty deep at corner. There's a couple guys on the defensive line who certainly have first-day draft potential. You'll see 6'6" or 6'7" Javon Dexter, you know, moving from the middle to strong side. And you got a guy, Britton Cox, former five-star enrollee at Georgia, who is now entering his third season at Florida, and they're still waiting for him to be consistent. He'll pick up a ton of PFLs and sacks, but he'll also have some plays where he's just not there. So that's his mission. The offensive line, I think, a little bit better than last year when they became sort of a run dominant team. The receivers are pretty mediocre, and you know, I think the running back room is a little shallow, quite frankly. But when you got Anthony Richardson as a dual threat quarterback, you essentially have an extra running back sort of built into that room in him. And again, when he gets to the edge, he can do some damage.
So preseason media poll, and again, it's a preseason poll and it's the media, so take it all with a grain of salt. But had Florida picked to finish fourth in the East division of the SEC, if you had to put a few Skittles on this, are you taking the over or under, or do you think that's about right?
Yeah, my ballot had them third behind Tennessee. I'm not a believer in Kentucky replicating what they did last year. I think even with Georgia losing all those first-round picks on the defensive side, their roster is so stacked, almost to the extent that, you know, Alabama has been in recent years, that they really can reload. the younger guys. So I think Georgia's far and away, taking the East. And then, you know, between Tennessee and Florida, you know, South Carolina might even be better than Kentucky talent-wise. But I think you're looking at a team that the floor is probably 6 wins and the ceiling is probably 8. And if Anthony Richardson has this, you know, crazy Cam Newton-like come up that some people are predicting, then I should see them getting to maybe 9 or 10. But I think this is a 6 to 8 win team.
Alan, how are you feeling about Oklahoma and Texas joining up your conference here in a couple years?
Man, you know, I'm old enough to remember when Arkansas and South Carolina came into the SEC in 92, and it seemed like the world was shaking. And, you know, those programs now seem like they've been here forever, right? So, man, it's just really going to be an earthquake type of deal, right? It's going to force scheduling changes. It's going to redo how you evaluate recruiting, because Florida's problem last year was they would have classes that ranked between 9th and 12th nationally, which seems pretty good, but you're 5th or 6th in the SEC. But when Texas and Oklahoma come in, you know, you can see some years where 8 of the top 10 or 11 classes in the country are in that conference. I think that's even likely in a way. So, you know, I don't know. I did not realize it was going to have such a profound effect on Texas A&M. I really thought they would come in and just get hammered because they hadn't done much in the Big 12. But it has really elevated their program from a revenue standpoint and from expectation to where, you know, they're the best program in that state right now. So when Texas and Oklahoma come in, it's just going to be, you know, 3 or 4 wars a week. I mean, you're going to have such an inventory of marquee games when you add those two teams to the conference, it's a crazy time for college football.
So is the SEC looking at the ACC like a buffet and they're just waiting for the doors to go open to go pillage the place? Or is that the anticipation that that's eventually going to happen as soon as the grant of rights will allow it, or until the lawyers can figure out a way? Or are they going to stay pat for a bit?
Well, you know, we talk about 92, that round of expansion that was Arkansas and South Carolina. They didn't expand again until 2012 with A&M and Missouri. And as you know, Texas and Oklahoma are due to come in and either 24 or 25, depending on negotiations. So they haven't, the SEC hasn't had these back-to-back years of sort of adding teams. When I talk to AD, I get the sense that even if a Clemson or an FSU, you know, got clearance from the grant of rights to come, None of those programs move the needle like Texas or Oklahoma do. So I'm not sure. You know, if we sort of get to a point where we assume that the Big Ten and the SEC are going to get to 20 or 24, well, then obviously a couple of ACC programs would probably be welcomed. But, you know, I don't know. I don't see the Big Ten rushing to get to 18 or 20 if they're not taking Oregon and Washington. So we might have at least a few years here where we sort of stand pat and let, you know, the Big 12 and Pac 12 sort of decide what they're going to do about rating each other.
So it feels like I'm minute by minute watching Nick Saban lose his mind more and more and more about the SEC and kind of the lack of the NCAA control and name, image, and likeness situations and transfer portals. Is the SEC kind of in general or as a whole as impatient as Nick Saban is right now with needing a better governing body? Do you feel like the SEC as a whole conference is wanting more structure for players and transfer portals? And do you see something happening to build that structure?
Well, I don't understand when some people in our industry or even coaches say we need congressional oversight. Because to me, I've never seen the benefit of congressional oversight on anything, so I don't know why we would assume that if the NCAA can do something well, then Congress will, quote-unquote, fix it. I think what you're going to have happen to avoid some antitrust issues down the road is that, the way I understand it legally, conferences as private entities will be able to set some regulations. Now, obviously, the Big Ten or the SEC is not going to want a more restrictive model than the other, right? Because, you know, Ohio State recruits against Alabama and Georgia and Michigan recruits against Florida. So you, one league is not going to fall behind the other. So I think what you might have is those two leagues sort of setting their own guardrails, and that will, you know, precipitate this sort of breakaway of college football, whether that's the top 36 or 40 or 50 teams. We'll have to see how deep it goes. But I think you move toward that pay-for-play models where I don't want to use the term employee because I don't want to get into all the labor stuff, but certainly I think there will be an expectation that if a player signs with you, that he can't be tampered with, or that he has a contract that's at least a multi-year deal, so that you're not having schools call up freshmen and call up people in December and quite frankly, try to poach them off the roster by offering them money. I mean, we've just seen the Dolphins get dinged. You know, the NFL really does a tight job of guarding tampering. Right now, there is no punishment for tampering in college football. Take your swing, you get the kid, he's on your roster, and if he's not, what have you lost? So I think there's going to be incumbent upon the major conferences to sort of self-govern in a way that fits them as we break away from like a pay-for-play model.
Well, Alan, we appreciate your time. Thanks for joining us. Great insight, and look forward to maybe chatting with you a little bit closer to September 3rd.
Sounds good, guys. Enjoy your preseason camp.
You got it. Alan Taylor, beat writer, University of Florida for The Athletic.
That was fascinating, just the back end of that. And I was having to really focus. I'm sorry for some of the sound quality on that. I wish it was a little bit more clear because I thought his information was fantastic. Essentially saying that the Big Ten and SEC are going to be aligned in whatever decision that they make with name, image, likeness, and with transfer portal, being able to pull, recruit, move athletes.
Yeah.
And that's why I say, yeah, Alabama rules the roost, but Alabama has to be on board with everybody because they've got to have everybody in that partnership. Yeah, Alabama could be like, well, we're Alabama. Okay, then go independent, be Notre Dame. But if you're going to be a part of what needs a very solid structure, a restructuring of rules to try to get a hold of everything that's going crazy right now, then get on board with this. And my guess is we're not more than two. Probably when Texas and Oklahoma join up with the SEC, there's going to be some real rules and structures on when you can transfer, how you can transfer, even though the NCAA is like transfer anytime you want. I've got to imagine conferences and presidents and ADs sit down and say, yeah, we'll pay you. And yeah, you can transfer, but this is how it's going to work. You're an asset of ours. We paid you $150,000 to come to this school. We're not just going to let you jump into a transfer portal whenever you feel it. It is not. There's going to be some free agency, but you're going to be paying for it, and schools are going to be paying for it if you want to move around. Because now there's money that's exchanging hands with these kids that are jumping into transfer portals.
You're essentially an employee.
I've got a $30,000 check, and yeah, I'm leaving for the transfer
and
portal.
And you want this money, you're going to have to sign a non-compete.
Yep.
All right, Hans and Scotty, 97.5, the EKSL Sports Zone. Matt's hanging out with us as we are live here at My Hearing Center. And Matt, simple phone call, 801-438-7058, and you can take out these brand-new, state-of-the-art Widex hearing aids out for a test drive for 30 days.
Yeah, it's the Widex moment. And what makes these kind of unique, it's pretty cool. It's the first hearing aid to really tap into artificial intelligence, AI. And there's this database, collective database of information that says, hey, when you're on the golf course, for example, this is how people like to hear on the golf course, and gives you a couple to choose from, and you get to pick which one you like. That information is stored back up in the database. So when you come back to a golf course, and I'm not saying just, you know, the course you like to go to. I'm saying any golf course, because it knows where you are via letting your phone know where you are.
Right? Yeah.
Whenever you go to a golf course, it goes into golf course mode, and you're going to hear the same way that you, in the way that you want to hear on that golf course. And as soon as you transition from the golf course and go into the clubhouse, it's going to make an automatic adjustment. Say, oh, actually, now you're in a clubhouse. This is how people like to hear in the clubhouse. And when you go get in the car, this is how people like to hear in the car. And it just makes those automatic changes. It's seamless. You don't feel it. It's not like there's a buzz or a beep. It's this nice casual flow into this new environment. And you're just getting the best listening opportunity wherever you go, because this hearing aid is constantly identifying what's going on in your surroundings and making the adjustments for you.
You know what I love, Matt, is the service that you guys give, because the technology can be frustrating to some people that need hearing aids. You might have a 75, 80-year-old individual that's coming in and getting the hearing aids, and they're like, well, technology. Well, what's great is, you know, my dad's come in a couple of times for adjustments. You know, your staff will call and say, how are we doing? Well, not so good in this ear. Come in.
Yep.
And you guys squared things away. You know, I remember when we sat down with him, we're like, hey, Dad, you can link this to Bluetooth. And he was like, what?
He's looking at his
I don't want a Bluetooth.
He's looking at his flip phone like, how do I do that?
He's like, I'm not trying to hook it to Bluetooth. Just help me hear better.
Hey, I'm not going to lie. That feature is incredible.
That's pretty cool.
Like when you may be at, I don't know, maybe an ecclesiastical service and you're zoning out and you...
Yeah.
You want to stream something or listen to an audiobook or a podcast, then there's a lot of great opportunities there.
And what's incredible is you get the
just
option.
Just throwing that out there.
You get the option. Like, you can.
Or you don't have to.
Or you don't have to.
Yeah.
But the technology is there, and you guys are here to help with any level of advancement that you want with that technology. And it's nice, too, because you guys have places all over the – like, this isn't the only location.
Right.
I want people to understand there's going to be a My Hearing Center close to you where they can help adjust whatever you need adjusted.
Yeah, whether in Utah County, we've got offices at Provo Nephi and American Fork, or up in North and Davis with Ogden and Layton, and we're going to be able to find an office close to you here in the Salt Lake Valley. We've got like five locations. And so going back, though, kind of you guys are alluding to this a little bit. You know, this is going to be as hands-on or hands-off as you want it to be. Right. If you want full control over your hearing aid, you want to make adjustments, you want to save multiple programs, you want to have it connected to you know every one of your Bluetooth devices, we're going to help you do that. If that freaks you out, just thinking that you have one more thing that you have to figure out how to reconnect or disconnect, we can take it fully hands off and it does it all by itself. And so whatever level you want it at, that's where we're going to set it.
It's real simple. It starts with a free consultation. I've been through it. It's a really cool opportunity to see where you're at. Then you can take out these hearing aids for a test drive. You got 30 days to see if they work for you. If not, that's great. Matt will thank you for your time, and you'll still get a gift card to the Home Depot. If you want to proceed, it's going to change your life. 801-438-7058. But just call, get that free consultation. Let's just find out where you're at. 801-438-7058 right here on 97.5, the KSL Sports Zone.
You're locked on to Hans Olsen and Scotty Chin.
That's right. Yeah.
Presented by U First Credit Union on 97.5, the KSL Sports Zone.
Hans Olsen, Scott Girard, 97.5, the KSL Sports Zone. Live here at My Hearing Center. Call now for that free consultation, 801-438-7058. All right, any good teas for the 60 and 60?
Actually, just opening it up to send out my videos here. Okay, today's teas for the 60 and 60. Yesterday was Isaac Rex, correct?
Correct.
Today's tease, this is a projection pick. This guy does not deserve this current position. He needs to play very well in order to preserve this position, but it's a projection pick.
This was a, you know, there were a few that caught your eye when the official ballots came in and you saw the official rankings. This was one that I looked at and was like,
don't know if he should be occupying a top 25.
Yeah, I probably would have put...
He's got top 25 potential, but this isn't a... Yeah, this is a sure pick for top 25.
Probably would have put 31, 30 maybe on this one.
I'd have gone anywhere between 25 and 35. Really, anywhere between 25 and 35. I would have been fine for this guy.
Yeah.
Now, he could come out this year, and he could absolutely prove it, but we'll see.
All right, here he is with that, number 17 in our top 60 and 60.
Here we go.
Now let's get this party started.
This is the top 60 and 60 as the Zone counts you down to the start of the 2022 college football season. And now it's time for today's selection as voted on by the local sports media and you, the fan. Our next selection saw his season cut short last year due to an ACL injury. But now that he's back and healthy, he's expected to dominate opposing offenses once again for the Cougar defense. Coming in at number 17, from Brigham Young University, 6'3", 235-pound linebacker, Keenan Peely. Brigham Young University head coach, Kalani Sitake.
Keenan Peely had an unfortunate injury last year, looking really good right now, and has tons of ability, next-level linebacker. He's what you want in the middle linebacker, tons of speed, can run the length of the field and the width of the field, and has a lot of punishing hits and physical in the box as well. Keenan's going to have a great year.
This is the Top 60 and 60, presented by Cypress Credit Union, where your future is our future. Top 60 and 60 on 97.5 1280 The Zone.
Number 17, it is Keenan Peely, linebacker for BYU. Coming off that ACL injury, only played three games last year. Frankly, kind of, what, two and a half, got injured in that Arizona State game with the ACL. And, yeah, so it's a little bit high, but I don't think that's not based on potential. It's not based on talent. It's just based on what this young man's done in the past.
Yeah. Yeah, I think this one's high just in this situation. I will tell you, I've got a lot of hope for this kid and his talent, his ability. I did a film review today. And I reviewed the Arizona and the Utah games. Arizona, he had 10 tackles and he had a sack. Utah, he had like four or five tackles and a sack. He really has been fantastic in the short time that we saw him last year. But you go through that level of injury and that level of recovery, and it's a long road back. So this is just a really lofty projection for a kid.
So there you go, Keenan Peely coming in at number 17 as we get ever so closer, hands, to the start of the college football season. Utah State will start 2 weeks from Saturday.
Yeah. It's amazing how quick it's coming. I'm just sending out so people can see. The two films that I did for Keenan, both of them are in sack situations. One of them is coming off a stunt, and one of them is coming off in a one-on-one situation off a six-man rush. The other one's a stunt off a five-man rush. And he did get to the quarterback a couple times. He really could be a sack leader for BYU if he stays healthy throughout the year, because he's very usable in those situations. The sack that he had against Arizona, he's walked up off the defensive end position. The sack that he had against Utah, he's walked up at the middle linebacker position. So, you know you can use him in so many ways. And I got to tell you, too, BYU's linebacking room is just jam-packed. This is probably the most ability they've had at one time in a linebacking room. Now getting Wilgar back and healthy, getting Peely back and healthy, Pepe will be back, and he'll be there and ready. And then you throw in Bywater and Thule.
Yeah.
You know, Scotty, I think we can all admit that that is an insane linebacking group. And I got to imagine we're going to see linebackers used at the line of scrimmage a lot, trying to get them one-on-one pass rushing. You just hope you don't get caught in some type of heavy run game. That's why I think that a Baylor matchup could be the Achilles heel for BYU. More so than some type of speed and finesse team like USC or Oregon. So Baylor's, to me, it would be a big test. Notre Dame has the ability to go heavy. If they really want to go heavy, I think Notre Dame's got the ability to go heavy. Arkansas, not as much. Arkansas is going to go a lot of speed. And it's it, to me, it's the heavy that could potentially hurt BYU more than the speed, which in the, I'm talking on the defensive side.
Yeah.
Because I think your linebacker usage, you could have Peely on the field with Pepe, with Thule, and with Wilgar. And you could even have another back out there because those guys they're all universal. They play at the line of scrimmage, and they're good pass rushers.
There you go, top 60 and 60, number 17. Number 16 coming up on tomorrow's show. All brought to you by Cypress Credit Union, here to help with all your financial needs. Your future is their future. All right, with that, let's get to it. Good, the bad, the ugly, right here on The Zone.
It's time to saddle up and talk about the winners and the losers. This is the good, the bad, and the ugly. Now, here's the good.
Good, the bad, the ugly, brought to you by Zero Res. No soaps, no harsh chemicals to clean those carpets like most carpet cleaners do. Right now, you schedule that carpet cleaning, $33 per room. You're going to get three rooms at $33 per, and then the fourth room is yours for free. All you have to do is search Zero Res online for details.
The good news today, Scotty, we could possibly see Kevin Durant rot the Boston Celtics from the inside out. I'm seeing some different trade proposals right now with the Boston Celtics, and what I'm seeing is two guys that made Boston extremely good last year, possibly packaged and move out, Marcus Smart and Brown. Both Brown and Smart were critical in the defensive efforts that Boston put on the court and everything that they did. You package the combination of those two and move them out for Kevin Durant. And I know you're as big a fan of Jaylen Brown as I am.
Yep.
It leaves you susceptible to the superstardom treatment. It leaves you susceptible. Because last year, it felt like it was just the grinding youth, man. It felt like it was everybody was in that thing together, and Boston was just a churning machine. They were really good. And you throw Kevin Durant in, and perceive it, you'd be like, well, that's – one of the top three players in the NBA. It'll be better, but it just feels like Kevin Durant is becoming a bit of a Westbrook, a disruptor, more than he is a contributor.
Yeah.
Although, if I'm in charge of the Boston Celtics, I probably package Jaylen Brown and Marcus Smart.
The thought is intoxicating for sure.
It is.
Yep.
It's overwhelming to think of him on the court with Tatum and oh, by the way, there were some picks that are associated with this potential trade to Boston because Miami's out. And what was it, Toronto?
Toronto's out, it seems like, yeah.
And Toronto's out.
Yeah.
So it's really coming down to Boston.
The other element to this, too, is Brad Stevens had to live and had a courtside seat to the Kyrie Irving debacle. So nobody knows what it's like to have a uber-talented but a malcontented player on your team. And Brad Stevens is ultimately the guy that's going to pull the trigger on this trade. He lived through the Kyrie Irving situation. I'm sure there's a little PTSD there. I'm surprised that this is another element that he's looking to go down that path of.
Mm-hmm.
But again, at the end of the day, it's still Kevin Durant. And it's still an elite top three player in the NBA. And those opportunities don't come around very often.
The other one was Toronto. And the other one was Phoenix. There was a bit of a rumble.
Yeah.
That Phoenix could move for him when they were going through some of the early stages with DeAndre Ayton. I know some of the original talks you heard.
Oh yeah.
Kevin Durant associated with Toronto, Phoenix and Miami. But now it's this. Would you do it? You're right there. You know, you're making the finals and
I'd probably do it. I probably do it. I hate myself for saying it, but I probably do it. All right, there's your good. Let's get to the bad. NFL legend Frank Gore has been hit with an assault charge after cops say he was involved in a domestic violence with a 28-year-old woman last month. Atlantic City, it's either like Miami, it's either Vegas or Atlantic City.
Yeah.
It seems like those are your big three. Atlantic City Police Department tells TMZ Sports Back on July 31st, officers were called to the Tropicana on a report of domestic violence. The 28-year-old woman, who they did not identify, was speaking with hotel security, did not exhibit signs of an injury, and complaints were not filed at the time. Police did launch the investigation. Gore was ultimately charged with simple assault related to the domestic violence incident.
So there's a couple of details coming out now from eyewitnesses saying that he dragged her by her hair butt naked across the hallway. So that's why the cops were called. That's why the report was put in, because people are watching him drag a woman by her hair. By all accounts, Frank Gore is not a good human. And we'll let the court proceedings play out, and we'll let this go through that. But he's had a couple of different run-ins. And he's continuing to do this boxing thing, even though Darren Williams knocked him out. Like, knocked him out of the ring, if I remember right. Didn't he? Didn't he knock him right out of the ring? Or I can't remember. Put him in the corner. But he knocked him out, didn't he?
Yes.
Frank Gore, just the thought of a man dragging a woman by her hair, clothed or not clothed, it's a hideous vision, man. That's horrible if that's the case.
And finally, the ugly.
And of course, the ugly.
Well, we go from Atlantic City to Las Vegas. Marshawn Lynch pulled over near Las Vegas Strip on Fairfield Avenue and West Utah Avenue around 7:25 a.m. on Tuesday, driving into curbs on the side of the road before the traffic stop. Cops believe he was driving under the influence, was taken to jail, did not submit to a breathalyzer, but according to TMZ, did have his blood drawn. He was arrested for a DUI back in 2012. Apparently, the driving was so poor in his 2020 Shelby GT500. Oh, man, what a great car.
Yeah.
The car appeared undrivable by the time cops arrived and busted him for the DUI. One tire completely missing, another one flattened. Left a trail of damage on the road until it reached that resting point with visible marks on the pavement and curve. Oh.
Yeah. GT500, beautiful car.
Yeah.
I've seen the pictures of it, and that front tire is completely missing. He was taken to jail, and he was booked for DUI, facing charges of failure and refusing to surrender proof of security, unregistered vehicle,
of course,
failure to drive in a travel lane, and many other things. You know, you don't got to go back too far. It was just 2012, and he had himself a DUI, and it's hard to see people continue to repeat like that, you know?
Not the Shelby. Oh.
Not the Shelby 500. It's a beautiful car. Did you see it?
Oh, yeah. I feel like I'm Cameron's dad coming home after he just kicked it off the back of the garage.
You killed the car, Cameron. What'd I do?
You know, they'd leave that moment where he's like, I'm going to talk to him. I'll take the heat. You know, I want to know what happened to Cameron.
Yeah, me too.
Because if you're Cameron's dad, like, you go from, you get old enough, you go to sympathizing with Cameron to sympathizing with his old man.
Yeah, it's true. So we keep seeing these later spinoffs, like they just did this bogus adventure or whatever with Bill and Ted.
Bill and Ted.
And we've seen all these, like, late spinoffs. They did one with Dumb and Dumber.
Correct. Never watched it.
If they did a, like, where's Ferris Bueller now? And did a movie based off of Ferris growing older and these friends and whatever happened with Sloan, and I would watch that.
Oh, in a second.
I don't know how they haven't spun off that movie.
Seems like it'd be a pretty simple premise there.
They've never moved off that movie, and nobody's remade it. And it's one of the most brilliant movies of the 80s.
Number one in our 80s comedy movie bracket.
Did it get voted number one?
It won the whole thing.
Well, for a reason. It's brilliant. I didn't remember that got voted number one.
Yeah.
It beat Christmas Vacation?
Christmas Vacation, yep.
That bracket was fun.
That was.
Next bracket season, Scotty and I will come up with something.
90s comedy or 80s drama?
I'm thinking 90s comedies because we went through those and they're really good. We could put together – did we do a full –
because you could do a whole Chris Farley region.
Did we do a full field on the 80s comedies?
Yeah, 64.
It was a full field.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Yeah, we could do a full field on 90s.
All right, 97.5, the KSL Sports Zone. Coming up next, another edition of Whole World News.
But hey, at least we found it interesting. This is Whole World News, presented by City Creek Mortgage on 97.5, the KSL Sports Zone.
We got the whole world in our hands.
You got the whole
Hans Olsen, Scott Girard. It is Whole World News right here on The Zone.
All right, Scotty, I want to take you to Irvine, California.
Right on.
A prominent radiologist, 53-year-old man, Dr. Jack Chin. He's loving life. He's got two beautiful kids. He's got a wife. He's got a great practice. Things are going really good.
Life is good.
Until just a little while ago. This man loves to drink lemonade, and he likes to drink his lemonade warm. I guess he does like a hot toddy or, you know, you've heard of a hot toddy, like a little lemonade, yeah, a little honey and a little.
I tried to drink a gallon of warm lemonade once.
Yeah, you did. So one day he's drinking his lemonade and he tastes kind of this chemically taste in his lemonade. So he decides he's better go get things checked out. Well, his body was reacting weird, and he went to the hospital, and they had found, Scotty, that he was suffering from ulcers, gastritis, and esophagitis. So
that's a lot of itis.
His esophagus was burned. He had ulcers in the lining of his stomach, and he was dealing with gastritis. So he starts thinking, wait, why would my lemonade taste chemically? And why would I be dealing with all these things? Well, he'd had some back and forth issues with his wife. So he's like, you know what I'm going to do? I'm going to set a camera in the kitchen.
Oh, the old nanny cam.
He sets a camera in his kitchen. Day one of setting the camera in the kitchen, he sees his wife with a bottle of Drano. She gets it out from under the sink, pours it in his lemonade, just a little bit, and puts it back under the sink. So he's like, this can't be real. So he leaves it out. Happened two more times because he really wanted to get the evidence. He wants to get the cold evidence that his wife is pouring Drano into his drinks. His wife had been pouring Drano into his lemonade for a time, and she was flat out trying to kill him. She's now been arrested. She's also a prominent doctor. 45-year-old dermatologist, Dr. Yu, she goes by Emily. She was arrested last week on suspicion of poisoning.
If you're a doctor, aren't there better ways to try to kill somebody than Drano? Like, she has access to the old pharmacy. She can find something, right?
That's a sadistic angle. I always prepare for Scotty's angles on my Whole World News stuff. Like, I'm always like, what? I usually know what angle that you come from. I didn't see this one.
I'm just saying this.
You make a good point.
Like, the Drano thing seems like that would be a pretty easy one to sniff out, no pun intended, by the guy. Like, like this doesn't taste right.
But, like, insulin injection? Like, if you had access to a lot of insulin, isn't that one way that
I think
it's
so
hard to detect?
Yeah.
I watch movies. That's all. I just watch movies. But it seems like, a prominent medical individual would have something a little bit more efficient. This is what he said in the first comments from this doctor. He said, I'm fearful of being in the same home and in the presence of this respondent due to the recorded attempts to poison me with Drano. On three separate occasions, I have video of her pouring Drano taken from under our kitchen sink and pouring it into my lemonade. I like to drink hot lemonade, he said. He said, After the children were born, I became concerned with Emily's behavior, his wife. He said, at one point, she demanded a massage. I declined because I was sick. She stepped on my head until I did, and also began hiding money from me. So there's some indicators. Like, if you refuse to give your wife a massage and she starts stepping on your head until you do massage her, you may want to start to check your lemonade. It's an indicator, man. I don't want, I feel really sick, honey. And she's curb stomping you. This is unnecessary behavior. I don't know, Scotty. It's crazy. I was reading a stat. There's a stat out there. I can't remember. It's a high percentage of murders that are carried out by a spouse in the world. High percentage of murders carried out by your spouse.
Look, if it's getting that bad,
go the other.
Just go get yourself a lawyer.
Don't go to the Drano.
What's the one used to advertise? A partner men can count on. Come on, like, just, you know, go get yourself a lawyer. It's probably time to. I'm not condoning divorce. I'm not saying that should be your first alternative. Try to make it work. But if you feel like she's trying to poison you and kill you, and she's curb stomping
it's
you,
it's
time to call your lawyer.
Knowing what I know, if I knew me, I'd call me. That was my favorite one.
Yeah.
That was my favorite advertisement. It's just crazy. What would you want your wife put away for life if
she's trying to kill me? Yeah, because then you have to worry, like, what happens when my kid, you know, gets cranky? What's she going to do at that point?
Yeah, don't want to have the kid get killed or nothing.
I know, right? Yeah, no, she needs to go away for a while.
Two prominent doctors apparently just can't live with each other. Drano does seem like a very primitive way to.
Yeah, that's the execution on that. Well, okay, maybe I should use a different word there. The
lack thereof.
Yeah.
Terrible deal, man.
All right, Hans and Scotty. Terrible, you know, I love deal. The fact that Matt actually purposely came in a little early because he's like, I got to sit in on the whole world.
Got to figure out what Hans is going to say here.
Can you believe that, though?
Well, the conclusion that you drew was actually the thing that I could believe. Like, if your wife steps on your head, it might be an indicator that she's trying to kill you. Is the conclusion that you came to?
Safe.
I'm going to say, if your wife maybe steps on your head on accident, I would automatically assume she's going to try to kill her.
When she's got both of her feet on top of your head, saying, "You give me a massage now." Probably your first thing you do, give her the massage. Yeah. And then the second thing you do the following day is call the lawyer.
Well, more for the wife. Like, if you need to get out of a relationship because it's not working well, I don't think resulting to trying to poison your husband should be your first thought. Like, there are other ways out of a relationship that probably won't lead to incarceration.
I would agree with you.
Yeah.
And I would suggest those ways.
Yes, those are better ways.
And then Drano. Like, come on. You're
No point. Yeah. What a miserable way to go.
It's convenient, I guess.
Oh.
He's dealing with all these refluxes and holes in his stomach lining. And
this reminds me of, remember The Sixth Sense?
Mm-hmm.
Oof.
Yeah, but I didn't, was there a...
Same thing?
Yeah,
there was a poisoning in there?
Yeah, remember the dead girl led the boy to the funeral.
The soup.
Where they found the footage of her pouring stuff into the soup.
Oh, I do remember that. Good poll.
Yeah, spoiler alert in case.
Yeah.
Oh, haven't seen
and
it.
Bruce Willis is dead. Sorry. The movie's been out for 20 years. You should know that.
You should know.
It's your own fault.
801-438-7058. That's the number to call. Matt and his crew here at my hearing center. Because let's be honest here. You know, we're joking about health stuff, but honestly, if people think about hearing loss and think, okay, well, it's just I keep asking what, it annoys my family, but that's the worst that's going to happen. People don't understand the other health issues that can come as a result of hearing loss throughout your life.
That's absolutely right. And I'm actually going to go back since we were talking about families and relationships, and then I'll address that. But, you know, I can't tell you the number of times where ultimatums have been put in front of me to spouses if they don't get their hearing checked. You know, again, if it's that bad and your spouse is pleading that much for you to do something about it, I mean, just come down. We're going to make it really easy and painless. Have a free hearing evaluation. At the end of the evaluation, we'll let you know what you can do. And you can even try the hearing aids risk-free for 30 days. and make sure they're going to work for you. If they're not going to work for you, a nice handshake, gift card to Home Depot for giving us a shot. And if it is, it's going to change your life and hopefully bring you closer to your spouse, as it has for many of our patients before. So,
A lot of people think, and Hans' dad is, he's been around the block a little bit, and so a lot of people think that the older generation is the one that really needs this. Look, I'm in my 40s, and I think a lot of it is because of radio, and I've had a set of headsets on since I was in my teens, and so I've had significant hearing damage. And we went in, we got the test. I was horrified by what I saw, and I'm now wearing a set. And honestly, it's changed my life too, and I'm not ashamed to admit it, because the quality of life that I've had since then has improved dramatically, and my relationships have improved because of it. So I'm sure you see people of all ages, but if you're in your 40s or in your 50s and you think I'm still too young for this, that may not be the case.
Yeah, and we do get a younger clientele than we used to. The number one contributor to noise, and the WHO just released some other stuff. The World Health Organization, not the band, just released some additional information that shows us, again, the amount of people being affected by hearing loss is a lot greater than we think it is, because the number one contributor to hearing loss is noise. So wearing headphones all the time. This is actually part of the reason why we see that more men have hearing loss than women. It's because they're in jobs that get them exposed to more noisy environments. You're running a crane all day. You're driving a truck all day. It's going to lead to hearing loss sooner in your life than if you worked in an office or whatever. So if you think there's a problem, come in. It's a great time to have your hearing checked. We've got a brand new technology. It's called the WideX Moment. It's the world's first hearing aid platform with pure sound technology. That's that really fast processor that gets the sound of from the hearing aid to your eardrum at the exact same time as the sound from the environment. And so it gets rid of this kind of tinny or artificial sound that people have complained about in the past. You really need to experience for yourself. So that's why we're doing that 30-day risk-free trial. Call right now, have a free hearing evaluation, and then go ahead and try the product.
Can you actually slow down or stop the degradation of an eardrum?
So the degradation of the hearing is actually happening inside the cochlea. There's these little nerve endings, uh-huh. And as those nerve endings are hit by this loud sound or just time, it starts to damage those nerve endings. And it's that damage that's causing hearing loss. They're not able to get stimulated, and that stimulation can't get back to the brain where we hear things. So your question is, can we stop the degradation of hearing loss? We're not going to stop it. We're going to significantly slow it down, though, right? So if you come in now and you have a mild hearing loss, in 10 years from now, you'll probably have a mild hearing loss, maybe a little bit more mild to moderate. If you come in right now, you have a mild hearing loss, you don't do anything about it, and you wait 10 more years, you're probably going to have a severe to profound hearing loss.
True.
And at that point in time, God, it's going to be really hard to do anything.
Yeah. 801-438-7058. Call that number right now, 801-438-7058. This is 97.5, the KSL Sports Zone.
I'm Dave Cawley, investigative journalist and host of the podcast, Cold. In October of 1985, a woman named Cherie Warren left work at a busy Salt Lake City office
to meet her estranged husband at a downtown auto dealership.
She never made it home. Cherie's car surfaced weeks later in Las Vegas,
in the parking lot of a hotel casino.
No one knows how it got there.
Strange. It was strange.
Both Cherie's estranged husband and her boyfriend raised suspicion for investigators.
I kind of thought that he might have done something.
But no arrests were ever made. In Cold Season 3, we dig into double lives, make new connections in the case, and examine the difficulty raised by reasonable doubt.
We want answers just as much as anyone else.
They have creeps like that now, too, so nothing's changed.
That's the new Cold Season 3, The Search for Cherie. Now available anywhere you get your podcasts.